This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 73. This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with Pitch Vision's batting coach, Gary Palmer. And we have your questions back for this week, so strap yourselves in. David, what's going on? I go off for a week and you've changed the name of the show. What's going on here, David?
Yeah, well, it's a quite exciting time for us. We're having a few changes throughout the whole of the website, actually. So it's quite good to sort of tie the podcast into the rest of the website. So part of the changes which are going on through the rest of the website is we're changing the name of the show. But don't worry, like they say in all the adverts, a new name, but it's the same great taste. So we'll still be answering all your questions and we'll still be speaking to top coaches and psychologists and fitness people and whoever we can get our hands on to get advice. But we'll be doing it under the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show banner rather than the old banner. That's the only difference. So a nice new logo, nice new name, and at the same, as I said before, the same great taste.
Well, David, you seem to be going through a bit of a technology phase at the moment. You're starting to get Pitch Vision Academy involved a lot more in Facebook and Twitter as well. Tell us about this Facebook thing, David. I'm on Facebook as well, but you want to get a lot more involved with everyone?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the good thing about Facebook is, you know, you can get instant communication with people about whatever you're talking about, and I quite like that. And we've had a Facebook fan page for Pitch Vision Academy for a little while now. But we've not really used it for anything. Well, in the past, all we've done is posted the articles from Pitch Vision Academy onto the Pitch Vision Academy page on Facebook, which is all right. You know, there's nice to look at. But we're up to a couple of hundred members on the Academy page on Facebook now without really doing anything.
It's a lot.
Which is not too bad, considering we haven't really done anything. I never touch it. I just let it automatically update itself. So now what I've started to do is try and be a bit more interactive on it. Tell people what's going on. Give people a bit of a behind the scenes look at what's going on at Pitch Vision Academy. Not post every single article. Post selected articles and try and get people talking about cricket. And one of the people who listen to the show, Adam, hello Adam, if you're listening, I'm sure you are. He suggested that maybe we could have some kind of discussion around Saturday mornings, because I don't know if it's the same with you, Kevin, but on a Saturday morning in my house, I get very excited about the cricket, especially when the sun's out. Get my bag packed early, make sure all my whites are ironed, and you know, just generally get giddy about these sort of things. And it'd be nice to have someone else to talk to while you're running around and doing this stuff. So I thought, well, actually, let me give credit. It was Adam who suggested it. Why not stick something up on Facebook saying, you know, who's getting excited about Saturday morning? Where are you playing? You know, what's the weather like where you are? You know, what do you hope to do today? Yeah, what's the strength of the opposition like? You can just talk about it and treat it a bit like, you know, just chatting to your mates before the game and discussing strategy and tactics and where you're going to be drinking afterwards. So that's the idea of it, to have a place where sort of like-minded people can talk to each other and see if we can get the number of fans up even higher, because 200 is pretty good for doing nothing. Yeah. So we've got over 6,000 people who get the newsletter, the email newsletter. So, you know, we should make it up to four figures on the Facebook as well. Let's see if we can do that. So if you're on Facebook, come and find us. You can search under Pitch Vision Academy. I think that's the easiest way to find it. The address is a bit difficult because it finishes with a long number, but I'll put a link to the show note. If you go to pitchvision.com and have a look for the show notes, I'll put a link to it in the show notes It's a fan page called Pitch Vision Academy, though. You can probably find it just doing a search on Facebook. You're on Facebook, aren't you, Kev? You're a fan of the Pitch Vision Academy page, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And I get sort of my daily updates from the site. But I really think, David, that Facebook could really be like a live forum for everyone, because you could have different cricketers around the world giving everyone advice, support, and it'd just be a great thing to see and sort of hype everyone up before the games, as you said. And it'll keep us interested throughout the week as well. So looking forward to seeing how this takes off, David.
Exactly. And a little bit behind the scenes look, you know, people like to look behind the curtain sometimes. So if I can tell people what's happening a little bit, what's going on behind the scenes, then maybe that'd be interesting as well. But the only way you're going to find out is to pop over and have a look. And if you're interested, hit that button that says Become a Fan.
We now have Gary Palmer, Pitch Vision batting coach, back to answer a batting question this week. Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps young players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a listen into the chat Gary had with David earlier this week.
This question is from a chap called Gandhi, and he says he wanted to ask which technique is better for an attacking batsman, the back and across trigger move or the forward press?
I think you can split that into two different scenarios. If you were playing against a slow bowler, a spin bowler, whether it be a left arm spin or an off spinner, I would look to forward press, because generally you'd be looking to get forward, get down the wicket, get your head and weight into the shot to get power into it, because it's a slower bowler to hit boundaries. If you were facing a fast bowler, I would advocate go back and across. But if you're really looking to improvise and score, I would go back and across really deep into my crease. That would give you a little bit more time. It would turn the half volley into a length ball, which you could hit straight back over the bowler's head or pick up over mid-wicket. If it's wider, you could sort of slash it square of the wicket. And the length ball ends up being a short ball, which you may be able to pull or cut. Or again, if you keep your elbow in your shape, you could possibly pick that ball up over mid-wicket area as well. So I would go forward press to spin, back and across deep in my crease, let the ball come to pace. But I certainly wouldn't really want to come down the wicket to pace. I think that's very difficult to do. You're better going back and across, keeping your head still, letting the ball come to you, keeping it out in front of you, where it's easy to ping over the boundary for six.
When we're talking about the forward press there, is it a common problem that someone presses forward and they can close themselves off, i.e. they can go a bit too far to the offside when they're pressing forward?
Massively, massively common problem. More so, it seems to be against quick bowlers. But some people's forward press is a little back and across, and then the front foot lands across the back foot before the ball's even bowled. When you go back and across, you should go back and across, wait for the ball. And as you lift that front foot off the ground, you've now got time to see the line of the ball and then readjust your foot really specifically to hit that ball well. Hopefully, you won't be closed off. But if you just go back forward land, definitely you'll be closed off. You're limited to your scoring areas. You're playing with half a bat, and the chances are you're not going to get that many runs. I mean, some people just stand still and press forward. That's what I would call a forward press. So your weight is actually going up the wicket. But when you go back across land with the front foot, your whole momentum starts going to the offside. You end up static when the ball's coming down. So you might as well have stood still in the first place. So you must go back and across. You get that like sort of rocking a baby movement. You go back and then back up into the ball. Back a foot, up 2 foot sort of thing. So your weight is going into the shot while maintaining your balance. And that means your head stays in line with the stumps at the other end, so there's no tip into the offside. And if you press forward against spin, the good thing about that is you've got your head and your weight forward. And if you want to then press back onto the back foot, you're in a great position to push back, leaving your head forward over the ball. Again, easier to hit the ball along the ground. But if you go back to spin all the time, you find that your head's back a little bit in your shot, and when you decide to go forward to drive, it still stays a bit back in your shot, and you end up chipping the ball in the air.
And with both of those, is it important to sort of stay on the balls of your feet rather than landing heavily and getting locked into that position early?
Yeah, definitely. You want to sort of be going weight back onto the front foot, weight going back onto the back foot with your head over your front foot. So as the ball's coming down, you're sort of near enough in between the two, ready to go both ways. And like you say, in that position, I know you're moving, but your head's staying in line with the stump to the other end. You feel like you're on your toes. You could go either back or forward from there. It's got to be a rhythmical movement.
And you also mentioned about keeping your shape and keeping your elbow up. When you say that term, most people probably know what it means. But just for someone who's not quite sure what you mean by keeping your shape, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is when look to maintain your shape after you've hit the ball. So if you're looking to maintain a high elbow and high hands after the shot, the chances are you'll maintain a good shape through the shot. It's like the rugby player kicking the ball for a conversion. If he thinks about the finish of his foot kicking right the way through, then the middle bit ought to look after itself. And we're just going back to that back and across. When people do learn to do it for the first time against pace, they do tip a little bit to the offside. But the key is, as you go back and across, you've got to get your back foot slightly outside the line of your head, which in short is leaving your head where it is, but just getting the back foot going back and across. It's when people's whole head starts to tip over because they're thinking about going back and across, head tips across, and it all goes wrong. Out of the two movements, the back and across one is a lot easier to perfect than if you're going to try and go like a forward press to pace bowling. That's much more difficult because, you do get closed off, you do get static. There's nowhere to go from there.
And is that something that takes quite a bit of practice to master, or does it? Can you pick it up quite easily with on the bowling machine or some throwdowns or whatever?
No, it does take a little bit of time. You've got to get the feeling of it and the rhythm of it, and you need to put the ball on a length. And I would practice this by on a bowling machine, putting it on a length and saying to the player, back and across forward, just as I'm putting the ball in, and then back and across back and across forward. So they get into a rhythm of using the crease going forward and back. Then I would call it randomly. So back and across forward, back and across forward, back and across back. And then the final progression to that practice would be to call it randomly, but every now and again, say back and across, put the ball in and say nothing and see if they start picking the length themselves. It doesn't happen overnight because you're training someone here. It's not just a movement. You're training them to judge the length. So if they did that early on in a practice in November where they haven't batted for a long time, it'd take quite a long time to adjust to it. You're better off having a lot of net practice first and judging different lengths before you start actually building that trigger into your session or your technique.
What kind of age would you start bringing something like that into to a talented player who's facing decent bowlers?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I don't coach young kids that up to 13 for the simple reason that you might find they go into a net or a game, and when the pace gets quicker, they actually naturally do some sort of movement. But if they don't, and they're suddenly going to start playing against real pace bowling, they need a technique to combat that pace bowling. And the back and across one, when I learned to do that as a youngster, for me, that made life a hell of a lot easier than standing still. I mean, some people say stand still, but for me, the longer you stand still, the more tense you get, the more stuck on the crease you get, and how many people can just judge length in a millisecond? Oh, that's forward, or that's back. It's very, very difficult to do. So it's something that maybe you'd wait for the player to ask you, or you'd watch the player progressing, doing really well, and then you might find that suddenly they're finding life difficult against the quicker bowlers, and then you might introduce it. I certainly will be teaching kids under the age of 12, 13 to be doing that movement.
Thanks, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. All right, David, I hope you're ready because we have a whole scroll of questions here. So strap yourselves in. I hope you have your drink bottle in your hand, David.
Yeah, I was just taking a drink there while you were talking. So I'm ready to go.
All right, let's delve straight into it, David. Our first question is from Zane. And he's actually moving up to opening batsman from number four, David. And he says he gets really nervous and he asks you for advice for what he should do to get the nerves out. And David, here's the age-old question every cricketer has asked about getting the nerves out, getting the butterflies out. But I think every player has a different way of dealing with it, David. Do you find there's a favourite way or a more effective way of dealing with nerves?
Yeah, it really very much depends on the individual because different personalities have different ways of dealing with that stress. But the first thing I want to say before I talk about that is some nerves are okay. You know, they give you that little adrenaline boost that you need to go in and fight. But what you don't want to do is you don't want the nerves to make you feel like you want to run away and you want to cower in the corner. Mm. I heard Alan Wells say once, the former Sussex captain Alan Wells say once, that you don't want to, when you go into bat, you don't want to be an apology, you want to be a gunslinger. And that's a really great phrase. So don't worry too much about nerves, because the nerves are there to make you feel like, you know, to put you in that gunslinger position. But if they're so bad that they're making you nervous, or you're thinking, all I want to do is run away and hide here, you don't, you know, in that fight or flight response, you've decided that something in your brain has clicked that you want to run away, then that's when it becomes a problem. So the question then becomes, what is it that's making you nervous? It's probably something to do with the importance that you've tied to that particular situation. You know, if you're going out for a knockabout with your mates, you don't really mind if you get out, you know, so what? You know, it's just a knockabout with your mates. But if you're playing a championship match, suddenly it becomes a lot more important. So if you've associated quite a lot of importance to that particular situation and you feel maybe that your skills aren't quite up to it, you're not sure whether your skills are up to it, that's when the kind of nerves start to come in. And that's where you start to fear the failure, because you're not sure about yourself.
Yeah.
It's a stressful situation when you think maybe your skills don't match the importance of the situation.
Yeah.
You can manage that. You can manage that in a couple of ways. The obvious way, the really obvious way, is to get your skills up to a level where you feel like you can manage almost any situation. That's harder said than done, obviously, because, you know, to be at a very high skill level requires a lot of practice, a lot of training, a lot of skill, many years worth. So you can't just, you know, suddenly, you know, one week be thinking, or am I good enough? And the next week thinking, oh yeah, I'm definitely good enough. This is just not going to happen. So, you know, you have to practice as hard as you can. The other thing you can do, and these are just sort of psychological tricks, and these are things you can do more straight away, is to learn what happens first. The fear of the failure comes first, or does the feeling of the stress come first? And by that I mean, if you are thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to do very well here. I really hope I don't fail and get out for a golden duck. And that happens first, and then you start to feel the stress. You get the sweaty palms. A lot of people, when they're stressed, yawn for some reason. Don't know why, but that's a physical response. Or it's true. Yeah. And sometimes you get, you feel confused. You don't know what's going on. Your heartbeat goes up. It can be any one of a great massive list of things that happen to you, which are more sort of physical responses, if you like.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's the other way around. Some people, they get their heart racing and the sweaty palms and the mouth goes dry and all the rest of it first, and then the fear of failure comes because physical response is creating the mental response. So you have to know which one of those is happening first. And that can sometimes take a little while for you to work out which one comes first. Once you've sussed out which one comes first, then you can use a trick to deal with it. If it's the fear of failure that comes first, you can talk about a technique that we used many times on this show called the stop technique, which we've posted on the site and we've talked about loads of times before. We don't need to go into any detail, but you basically tell yourself to stop thinking negatively and replace the negative thought with a more neutral thought, like I know I can do well or something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you want to know more about that, I'll put a link to the show notes in the show notes to the article on the site that tells you about the stop technique.
Yeah.
If it's the physical reaction coming first, the stress that's coming first, then you can learn to control those yourself by recognizing the symptoms and then being able to deal with them. And there's loads of ways you can learn how to deal with those kind of responses. You might have heard coaches and players say it's quite a common phrase in modern coaching is to get your heart rate down.
Yeah.
Try and get your heart rate down. And you can control the speed of your heart rate. It's a funny thing to think, but you can actually control it. It takes a bit of practice sometimes because you have to think about it, but you can do it. You can get your heart rate down. You can get that dry feeling out of your mouth. You can learn when that physical response is happening and learn how to stop it happening.
Yeah.
So an example of things like that is use things like the Alexander technique, which teaches you very, very intense body awareness. So
yeah,
a lot of the time we're not aware, we're not necessarily aware of what we're doing, how we're standing, how we're sitting, whatever. And the Alexander technique teaches you how to deal with that. And people always talk about meditation. I've never tried meditation, but some people swear by it. So there's another way. And you can do self-hypnotism, all things like that. But those are things that are slightly outside of my realm of knowledge. But the key thing to remember with if you get the physical responses, you have to come up with a way of managing that physical response, and then that will stop the fear of failure.
I also think it's important for someone to have confidence in themselves. I think you mentioned this on a previous show that when you go out to bat, you should think that all you can control are the controllables. So go out to bat thinking that if a good ball gets you, it gets you, but you'll do whatever you can to control the controllables. And I think that's something I try to bring into my game this year, and it takes out the nerves a lot, I reckon. If you go in there, just confidence in what you've done, confidence in the training you've done, and think that if a really good ball gets me, or if there's a ripper of a ball that's going to get me out here, then so be it. But I'm going to do everything I can sort of not to give away my wicket. So I think that's another piece of good piece of advice you gave out on a previous cricket show as well.
Yeah, I agree. And on the back of that, really, what comes off the back of knowing that, you know that when you have practiced hard. If you have put in the practice, you know that you've put in the practice and you feel more confident in yourself. If you haven't put in the practice, you can't make up for it on Saturday morning with a net. You know, you've got it's something that builds up over time. I remember a couple of years ago, I first started playing for my current club. It was 4 years ago I started playing for my current club. I think maybe three seasons ago, we were struggling for a relegation battle. I've told this story before, so sorry to anyone who remembers this from a previous show, but it was a long time ago I told this story. We were struggling against relegation. Our first team was struggling against relegation. And the last game of the season, the team had to win in order to stay up. The captain said, right, we're all going to come in at 11 o'clock and do extra practice. And while that was a good sentiment, what I thought to myself, being a fairly new member of the team, you know, I didn't want to say too much, but what I thought to myself at the time was, why are we trying to put all this practicing at the end of the season? We should have done this, you know, what we were doing in January, you know, in the winter. Why weren't we practicing getting our technique perfect in January and February? Why weren't we using pre-season training to get our iron properly? Why weren't we practicing hard every Wednesday afternoon, which is when we have our training? You know, why did we not have nets before the games on a Saturday morning? It's too late if you're trying to make up for it in the last game. You've got to build it up over a period of weeks, of months, of years. So you're absolutely right. But once you're there, once you've built it up, and once you've got that behind you, that bank account, if you like, of credit full of practice, then you're going to walk out a lot more confident than if you've only had a quick knock up 5 minutes before the start of play. Of course you are.
Yeah. David, our last question from today is from Clive, and he says his 8-year-old son's a cricket tragic. And he goes on to say he started training in the middle of last summer at our local club, just doing some fun club stuff, and he's now started pre-season nets. He says, we spend most of the winter still playing cricket at the local park because he insisted on practicing.
And let me say, Kevin, before you carry on, Kevin, let me just say that that is dedication. Yeah. Playing cricket in the park in the winter in this country is not fun. Anyway, carry on.
He says he absolutely adores cricket, David, and he says, my question is, what is the best way that I can assist him in becoming the best player he can be? He says, I see lots of cricket academies that are available, but they look more like fun sessions more than serious training. I'm wondering whether at 8 years old I should be letting him just enjoy his cricket than expecting serious coaching to assist his development. And he says, by the way, he's not doing this just because he wants him to play, but he's saying his son really wants to play, which is good, David. Mm. Just a few thoughts on that. He seems to be enjoying cricket, mm-hmm. and he says that the cricket academies have more fun sessions, David. Now, if he's already enjoying himself, do you reckon there's a line you can push by taking him to serious cricket coaching, David? Should you leave that to him or ask the son, he's a bit too young to make up his own mind, of course, but if he's already enjoying himself, do you think serious training could hurt him at all?
I don't think it can hurt him. But in many cases, it does end up hurting the player. At age 8, it's very, very important for the kid to do whatever they enjoy doing. Because if they're forced to do it, then that's, you know, you're not really going to get that, do very well with them. Yeah. So you don't want to force them to do it. Sometimes with an 8-year-old, you might have to do nothing except say, do you want to play cricket? And they're off. You know, they're really into it. But another ones, maybe it's a bit more, you know, you have to encourage them a bit more and they might enjoy it when they're there. But the absolute key is they've got to be enjoying what they're doing. So if he's enjoying those fun sessions and he wants to do more of those fun sessions, by all means, do them. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't get specialist coaching for an 8-year-old who doesn't want specialist coaching. But if you say to him, do you want me to take you to a proper cricket coach and he can teach you how to play all the shots properly and you know, be a better bowler and be a better fielder, and the kid says, absolutely, I can't wait, let's go, when can we go, let's go now, then there you go, just take him. Because the key is enjoyment. It doesn't really matter what they're doing. They can be doing very highly technical detailed work, and if they're enjoying it, more power to them, carry on. Or they can just be running around, you know, with a tennis ball in their hand and playing a game of continuous cricket at the end, which, to be honest, most 8 and 9 year olds, that's probably all they're interested in anyway, running around and having fun with their mates. But whatever, it doesn't matter. The key is, as the dad, in my mind, and I've got an 8-year-old myself, so I know about these things. The key as a dad, I would say, is to not get too involved with his development. Let him do what he wants to do. Let him have fun. And if he wants to do technical work, great. But don't do too much of it as the dad. You know, get a proper coach in to do it, if that's what he wants to do. And then if you if he wants to go down the park with his dad and play cricket, yeah, by all means, you know, go down the park, have fun, play cricket, mess around, do whatever he wants to do. But make sure that it's not turning into this highly intense coaching session where, you know, you end up pointing your finger and shouting at him and saying, you know, you've got to kick your elbow up and you've got to hit the target more often when you're bowling. You know, that's when it becomes, and it's quite hard as a dad to coach your own son. So
yeah,
or daughter for that matter. Let's not leave the girls out of this. It's very hard to coach your own son or daughter. So don't worry too much if it's not working out for you doing the coaching yourself. But if they want to get coaching, yeah, by all means. The other thing I would say is do encourage your child to play more than one sport, because it has been proven that from a young age, children who play more than one sport, I'm talking 2, 3, 4 sports, get are much more successful at their chosen sport when they are 16, 17, 18. And the reason why that is they build up this archive in their mind of physical literacy, if you like. It's like a blueprint. It's like learning about spelling and grammar so you can read a great novel. Yeah. You can't read a great novel unless you can you understand that the way that sentences are structured, and you don't have to be able to write, but you have to understand how to read before you can read. It's the same with physical skills. If you can throw a ball, catch a ball, hit a ball, kick a ball, run, jump, throw, do all those physical things, then you can just apply those within whatever game that you're playing. So as an eight-year-old, I would say, get him playing cricket, get him doing as much cricket as he wants to do, but also gently encourage him, how about we play some football as well? How about we play some rugby as well? How about we have a game of tennis every now and again? Build up that database of physical literacy, because that's going to stand him in really good stead when he's an older teenager. And it's the perfect age to do it. Eight, anything from six upwards, it's the perfect age to start getting involved in sport and understanding the way that sport is played and understanding how to move within different sports.
Well, that's all we have time for today, but before we go, we have to announce the winner of the Pitch Vision competition. So David's here to announce the winner. So who's the winner, David?
Well, we had some good questions this week, but the one I liked the best, I think, was Clive, because he reminded me of me and my son. So well done, Clive. You win a Pitch Vision Academy online coaching course, and I will drop you an email. I've got your address, so I'll drop you an email to give you the details on how you can get that. So, Kevin, how can people who are listening who want to enter the competition, how can they enter the competition for next week or future weeks?
Well, it's really easy, David. You email your question. It doesn't even have to be a question. It could be a comment. How do you think the show could improve? Any comments you have about cricket, about anything you've seen? You email it in to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And all you have to do is enter in the subject heading podcast competition. Then enter your question or your comment and send it through, and you could be a winner like Clive. I'm sure his son's going to enjoy the Pitch Vision Academy course, David.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
It's perfect. So send it in. That's micricketcoach@pitchvision.com. You can get more information, tips, advice and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 2nd of April. So we thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampath signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.